This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Caliendo here. Welcome in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Pete Caliendo. That's Paul Venner. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see him. If you're listening to the podcast, you're going to hear him soon. And we are going across the pond to our great friends in Holland. I've been there many times. What a beautiful country, beautiful people, very clean country, very organized. One of the best, by the way, one of the best educational coaches programs in the world. They've done a great job developing coaches at the grassroots level there. People around the world have done it. They've invented things that we didn't have in the U.S. So this is going to be exciting because we're going to talk to one of the top people in Dutch baseball, and also someone who's traveled around the world teaching a lot of different things. But for right now, don't forget, go to baseballoutsidethebox.com. You can get the podcast, or you can go to YouTube also. Check it out. We would love for more listeners. So forward everything that you have on social media to everybody you know in the game. So, and as you know, we love to get started right away. So let's introduce our guest from across the pond. He's the head of athletic performance for the Dutch baseball. He is the movement ecologist, a CEO of Unstability, the Aqua Bags. I got a chance to experience the Aqua Bags in Russia. Those were awesome. He's a course instructor with the famous Franz Bosch. He will tell you about Franz a lot better than I can. Speaker consultant for professional baseball. He travels around the world. He's spoken at the Texas Baseball Ranch. He's spoken at the Florida Baseball Ranch. These guys, it's a group of guys. You've heard some of them on the podcast before, some good friends. And I want to introduce to you Paul Venner. Paul, how are you? And how's everything? A little tough right now for everybody in the world.
Hi, Pete. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's crazy times for sure.
Well, at crazy times come crazy experiences. So I've got my Dutch mug that was given to me by a good friend in the Netherlands. So I got my, it's water right now. So there's no alcohol in here.
Good. Smart.
Listen, thanks for joining us. On the last podcast, we talked about a little bit about the coronavirus and, you know, everybody's doing what they should be doing, staying home, you know, the hand washing, all that. And I really believe that if everybody follows the direction of our governments, our medical people, I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah, definitely. It's I think it's a global thing, and it brings us together, and it's a collective thing. We all need to do it together. So just do whatever you can do.
Absolutely. And I love, you know, I like to look at the positives of things. You know, I'm always looking for what, you know, what can be positive about all this. Like you said, people getting together, we're getting together on the podcast. I mean, I'm doing more podcasts and actually seeing people, you know, one-on-one, and we don't have to be next to each other. But then there's a lot of other positives, and I'm seeing the little lining of white that's happening, that people are getting better as long as we follow the rules. So hopefully everything's over there, you know, getting better in the Netherlands and in the U.S. We, you know, we're waiting a little bit to see what happens, and things will be good.
Yeah, here everything is fine. I think it's good, like under control, and people are taking good care and following directions and doing their things. And like my thoughts are with those who suffer, and with like all the people in healthcare, and like the vital systems that are doing great work to keep everything running. And for me too, like I look at the opportunities, like the positives. Like I get a lot of work done that normally you never get done, and work online and stuff like that. So we need to be adaptable, right?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, some of the things that we're going to talk about today are things that players can actually be doing at home, because a lot of these players are sitting at home.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
So that's what I'm excited about. These are things that can be done at home. So let's get started right away. First of all, just an overview, a quick overview about, you know, a little bit what you do in all sports.
Yeah, cool. So basically what I do, I look at movement, and I look at how you can improve and optimize movement to improve performance. And prevent injury or like increase rehabilitation, improve.
And how does, you know, I'm always curious, you know, I see a lot of things that you guys are doing. Explain how it works in baseball, whether it be throwing or fielding or hitting or any skill in baseball. We have to understand the movement of the body and then explain what you do, because it's not just only about movement. Yeah, obviously you do a lot of different things. Explain how those kind of work together, because in the old days we understood movement. Okay. We did movement patterns. At least we thought we understood them. Obviously now with science, it's changing a little bit, and we did it over and over and over and over again. And that's what we knew. But now times are changing. It's not about being, you know, the block training they talk about. There's a lot more than just the block training. So maybe you could explain that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think like the old paradigm, it's like almost like looking at a human being as a machine. Like you've got all cogs in a wheel and like everything like needs to be as perfect as possible and repeat over and over again. Like people working in a, doing the same repetition all over again and striving for perfection. But actually like we're more like a living organism and a biological system. And if you look at the laws of biology and nature, you see different things that emerge. So it's not about perfection, but it's actually about learning to deal with like little differences and things that are not going that well. And learning to adapt on that.
Nick, yeah, no, keep going if you have more.
Yeah, so like a movement is never perfect. Like we never make the same movement twice. Again, every movement is a little bit different all the time because there are so many variables that it's just impossible to control in a perfect way. So that's why we need to come up with different ways of moving.
So because of those patterns that are different all the time, that means also individuals are different in how you might train them.
Yeah, that's true. But also like all human beings also have like same principles like that are same for everybody. So you've got like some principles that are very generic, like generic rules that account for like every organism or every human being. And also like individual differences based on your individual anatomy, your individual physiology and your state. But it's all these interactions that through which like the movement outcome emerges.
And so, Paul, does the individual's body structure, you know, I might have a 12-year-old who might be right now a little heavy. I might have another 12-year-old that's real skinny. So does the training change for that individual? Because certain people can do certain things and others can't yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that changes the constraints that the organism has to deal with. And so basically, like if you've got different constraints because you have 20 pounds, you're 20 pounds heavier, it changes the way you can move and the way you like that, what's your performance limiting factor. So that's also one of the foundations in the approach, is like looking at the constraints and by manipulating the constraints that you have within the task, organism and the environment, you can manipulate the movement outcome. And if you want to get certain improvements in movement, then by changing those constraints on task and environment, for example, you can guide the athlete into like a direction that is more suitable for that individual.
And Paul, I mean, we're talking about getting kids to start doing this as young as possible.
Yeah, basically, it's not a thing that requires a certain age. Like I really see it as just like a different framework, like a different paradigm, like a different pair of glasses to look through. Because then like with all different ages and different levels of development and different level of playing, like you also have to deal with different levels of constraints.
And how do you know, like, how do you know what the constraints you're going to place on that player, depending on their ages? Is that something that just from experience?
Yeah, and of course, like there's like a lot of science on also on different ages and like different levels of development, but definitely also experience and intuition that you develop through the experience. And yeah, for example, what you see like with really young kids, like it can be more unstructured play. Like actually, if adults interfere, actually the learning effect can decrease a lot. Like at a young age, it's better to just let them play and do a lot of different games instead of like doing the same game all the time. And then like towards like in development, you can change and make it more narrow, like within a specific sport, like specialization. But even then, like even at the highest level, if you're a pitcher, for example, like it's a really monotonous movement, really repetitive. But even then, still, you actually want to make a lot of variations within that movement and around that movement, around like similar themes that that occur within that movement and are important for that movement pattern, to build a more robust movement pattern that's really adaptable and it can handle a lot of different situations or like minor things that go differently and that just doesn't break down that easily.
Very interesting, love it. And since we talk about constraints, we're going to jump around a little bit, but let's talk about in baseball, individual constraint, whether it be on hitting or pitching or any skill you want to pick, and then maybe even a team constraint, to give kind of an example of each.
Yeah, cool. So like an individual constraint can be like just the way the body is built. So like everybody has like slightly different lengths of certain bones, or the way that like the bone fits into the socket, like for the hips or for the shoulder or whatever. And like this can change like the amount of mobility you have around a joint, like the range of motion. So if we then, for example, gonna force somebody to make a very long stride, while that person like anatomically is just not really capable of doing it, then we're gonna force them like out of their optimum length, and they're gonna find stability in their end ranges in which like they are not protected anymore by the muscles and have higher risks for injury.
Now, I remember, let's stay with that real quick on the length of the stride, because I remember working with Tom House many years. You know, there's times, like you said, a player couldn't get a certain, you know, leg stride. He couldn't get out there because of his constraints of his body. So what are we doing to get him to do that? Do we put him in that position so he feels it? And then he does it a couple times, or is there other methods?
Yeah, so there's a toolbox, and I think the best is like to have a lot of variation from that toolbox to get that feel. So yeah, you can definitely like feed the mistake, like increase the mistake, so that the person becomes more aware of it. You can also play with a lot of different variations, so the person can self-organize and find their way, what feels better, so they get more information from all the different movements and learn more than just doing the same thing all over and over again. And it's important in the situation you create that you then always work with clear goals, so that you're not just having variation for the sake of variation, but that you always get the feedback depending on whether you hit your goal or not.
So what we're saying is you've got your toolbox of things you can use. You're not sure exactly what's going to work in that toolbox. You're going to use different things and then figure out and start to see, oh, this is working.
Absolutely, yeah. And that one thing that you should want to avoid as much as possible, and that's something that sometimes is really hard for a coach in particular, like if you used to coach in a certain way for a very long time, and that's like that we don't want to tell too much.
Yes, yes, so too much talking.
Yeah, yeah. So I often say, like, let movement do the talking, like the athlete as much as possible, but not giving a lot of like internal focus feedback on put your shoulder here and your elbow there and your hand there and all that stuff.
Absolutely. That was the way we used to do it for a long time. I know even in the U.S., because of all this research, coaches are starting to change. You know, all the conferences that we have and things are starting to evolve, which is great to see. I always say this on the show, be careful that the Japanese don't learn this, because if the Japanese learn this, they're going to go to another level. Because, you know, they are as block training as you can get.
Yeah.
With some variation, but not the variation you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I know it's changing.
Yes, it is. So, but it's good. It's good for the game.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Let's take the game, the practice itself, or the game you talked about, and let's take the mention a constraint when it comes to a game. What are some constraints that coaches can do in games or practices?
Yeah, like the most obvious one that comes to my head now is, for example, like the size of the field.
Mm-hmm.
Like obviously a very clear constraint on.
You could play in a softball field.
Yeah, like it totally. Yeah, but even like a baseball field, like you've got different sizes, it's gonna change, like your approach tactically because of it, or like at the speed, like if you play on artificial turf or on real grass, like wet or dry grass, like weather conditions, like all that stuff.
Yeah, that's great stuff. I love it. And I, you know, when we started this, I probably should have started with this first, because now as you're talking and you mentioned, is the first thing with your athletes before you do any of this, do we got to evaluate their body structure, their flexibility, their strength?
Good question.
A few things to be able to then go on and determine what we're going to use in a toolbox.
Yeah, well, good question. And I definitely see a high value of that. But actually, like a thing I learned from Franz Bosch is really to start from the movement analysis. So actually, if possible, just look at like the sporting analysis. So how is somebody moving within the sport, within the specific movement pattern that you want to look at?
Mm-hmm.
And then observe that, like make an analysis of that. And he has a great framework for that. I think his new book, Anatomy of Agility, will be out in a few months.
Oh, great.
In English. So then, based on that movement analysis, you can already identify some bottlenecks within the movement pattern. And then you can ask yourself a question like, is it a mobility issue? Is it a strength issue? Is it like a stability or a control issue? You can, and then I see a value of looking at other tests, like performance tests, strength tests, range of motion tests, all that stuff.
Agility test also?
Yeah, you can use that like as a, I see that as a performance test as well, like looking at a time, for example, on a certain agility test. But like looking at all those individual separate tests, and I think this is a big mistake that's often made, like all separate departments are doing their own separate tests, but nobody is actually looking at it from this movement analysis perspective, and then it's really hard to identify, okay, I get these scores on this test, but what does it tell me for this athlete in this movement?
Interesting. Hey folks, check out Paul Venner, paulvenner.com. He's also on Facebook with Paul Venner, and he's on Twitter at Paul Venner. So check him out. He's got some great stuff on Twitter, and then you can see all the people he kind of mingles with, and they talk about different things. A lot of learning going on there. Paul, you mentioned the core problem in training. You may have mentioned it already, but the core issue when it comes to training, what is it?
I think the core problem is a lack of integration. So integration of like different departments and having a shared methodology, like integration of like motor learning and control with like biomechanics, physiology, all those things. So also from my own background as a strength and conditioning coach, which was my background, it's very often like really isolated, like very deterministic, looking at separate elements, like really a reductionist approach. And I think we need to have like a integrated systems approach.
And if you're a baseball coach, I mean, one of the things that you must do, obviously, is one, study the movement of the body, understand it, because some baseball coaches, they've not maybe not taken kinesiology classes or courses. I think one is studying it, but two, you've got to get with your athletic development person and really coordinate things.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really good to have a lot of interaction between the different disciplines. So both from the sport medicine, as the athletic performance, as the technical staff. So that's also like within our Dutch approach, something that we...
Look at this, you're almost famous. I'm getting calls now. Folks, you're going to have to email me if you got any questions for Paul. Love to take calls, but it's not that easy. But hopefully we get to that level. But continue, Paul. Sorry about that.
No worries. So what I said, that's something that we have built very strongly within our program in the Netherlands. That I, for example, also give a lot of input on the movement analysis and the training, also the pitching or the hitting specific training. So there's a lot of communication and integration like with the skill coaches.
Paul, let me ask you, I'm gonna kind of jump ahead a little bit and then we'll come back, because as coaches listen, you know, for some coaches this might be new, and we talk about the constraints, you know, constraints could be even like a bigger ball, a smaller ball,
yeah,
different things to make it uncomfortable. It's almost, you're reminding me, because I go a lot to Cuba, Dominican Republic, a lot of, you know, Latin countries. It's almost like they instantly do it already.
Absolutely.
When we have to train for it.
Absolutely. I think a big mistake is to build like nicer stadiums with like even better turf. Everything is perfect, and then you lose all this natural variation that already makes you having to adapt more.
Yeah, I watched recently a video. I've got several different. I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he traveled all over the world to identify the top athletes in the top sports. You know, like long distance running, coming from an area in Africa, and I looked at their training center. It looked like a war zone. You know, I mean. And then you wonder why they're that good. I mean, it's the same in the Dominican Republic. Now, if you take a player, that's interesting. You take a player that comes from that kind of area and you bring them to the U.S. and they play a nice field, it's going to be a lot easier for them. But you still need to continue that training, don't you?
Exactly. Like, I think for playing like competition, it's great like to have those amazing fields and like the best material, but you always like within training you want to build in this variation and this level of uncertainty, unpredictability, because this makes you having to adapt, and like you say, this makes it more challenging. So I think way too often like stuff is way too boring, and people just go through the motion, doing endlessly the same thing over and over and over and over. And even proudly call it the grind. Like,
yes.
I really, sorry, people, if you not, like
not
this.
Not a good term.
I hate that word, not really. Grind, it's the least thing that you should want to have. Like,
right.
to like, for me, I think you can always find ways to keep it fresh and challenging, and it helps also like the motivation, like the intrinsic motivation, because everybody likes to get like challenged and develop themselves, and we get in the space that people don't like to get challenged anymore, because they used to become like those zombies just following the instructions.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of being creative and adaptable and all the things that we actually want a player to be.
And I love those words, creative adaptability. You know, as I'm listening, you know, obviously this makes common sense to when you look at young, let's take young kids, you look at young kids at 10 years old, 11 years old, you know, they don't want to do the same thing over and over and over again. They want to do something more fun. And this is keeping kids in the game longer. But I'm also seeing, not only is it fun, keeps in, you know, kids more interested, they learn how to adapt. One of the things we're facing in the U.S. is, you know, little by little, we're having a hard time finding kids who can play the game on their own, who could deal with pressure, who can deal with failure, and this prepares them for that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And that's the thing, like, if you actually want to learn the importance of failure. Because it's from the failure that you actually learn. So actually the failure is an opportunity to become better. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it that way, then you're driven to push yourself and fail because you know that you get better because of it.
There's a level when you're working with the player, whether it's individual or team, there's a point where you might make it tougher, but there's also a point where you're making it too hard.
Yeah. Yeah. This is what in literature often is called the optimal challenge point. So you want to find this optimal challenge where the individual is challenged just hard enough that they really need to do their best, and they then automatically you cannot have 100% success.
Sure.
But it shouldn't be so hard that they lose motivation and give up.
That's when you reduce it then.
Yeah.
You go back.
Yeah. And so normally, something I learned from also a lot of other great movement professionals, you hear like around 70-80% of success to failure. And that's, I think, also like the problem in hitting. And I know Bart Hanegraaff does a great job at
Adam on the podcast, great job.
Yeah, does a great job applying that in hitting. Because in hitting, obviously, if you're successful, your success rate is 30%. So it's almost intrinsically like not really motivative, like if you would always practice on that level.
Sure.
So you need to find that balance of providing people with more success so that they get more motivation, but it shouldn't become too easy because then you're gonna develop like different patterns. You're not gonna adapt, and you're not gonna train at the level that is actually required in competition.
And guys and folks around the world, just so you know, I've been trying to get Paul on the podcast. That's been a scheduling problem of mine, but also because Paul's very busy. He's traveling all over the world. He's training athletes, teams, in different sports, not just baseball. But we're glad to have him on. Hey, listen, the million-dollar question. This all sounds great. There's science behind it. There's research behind it. But tell the folks, you know, ultimately, as you're doing all this, you're also seeing results. What are some of those results with baseball players?
Yeah. Well, for example, many, like from getting less injuries, like getting better performances. So if you look at like our baseman development in the Netherlands, I think like 7 years ago, maybe one person a year like signed a professional contract,
mm-hmm.
and barely none went to college, like also just a few. And now last year we signed 6 pro contracts and wow. like 15 people to a scholarship college. So you see a big increase in the output within the development program, but also for the senior level, for example, an individual like result I'm really proud of is, for example, looking at Rick van der Herk.
Oh yeah, I know Rick.
Yes, he plays in Japan now, Fukuoka.
Big tall guy, right?
Yeah,
real tall.
Yeah. So great guy, and he also made a really big development, like over the years, like integrating more and more of these methods into his training. Yeah, with great results. So even like at a later stage of his career, he still increased his velo and ability to maintain it through the game, and also in recovering from injuries and stuff, he had a lot of benefits with that.
And for folks around the world, if you didn't know, especially in the U.S., you know, the Dutch, it's not a big country. They don't have millions of players playing there. They have thousands, but they don't have millions. And they get a lot of players in college baseball, professional baseball. And like I said, also, I think they have a great coaching educational program where they educate their coaches. And that's a big benefit because now the grassroots level is getting better. And the other thing, Paul, I got to mention, this type of training, also, you got to see the young kids. They probably want to come to practice because it's fun.
Yeah, it's definitely a big difference. So there's a lot of fun. There's a lot of self-regulation. So there's a lot of opportunity for them to make their own decisions. And we guide them through those decisions.
And I got to believe that's a big mistake we've made in the past, and we're learning from it. And that is getting players to learn on their own. Let them give you the answer. I've heard you say that a couple times. Very important.
Yeah. It's autonomy. And autonomy is really important and one of the big misunderstood ingredients as well. Also, for example, in like strength and performance training, like very often we give these precise schedules with like the whole program, like 3x8 of squats and 3x6 of this. And then there's no decision making for the athlete. And then we're going to decrease their autonomy. And actually, what science now also shows is that, like, if autonomy is increased, this also increases intrinsic motivation, because now they feel that they have ownership on it and they make a choice. And it's very, like, with some simple things, you can build this into your practice without, like, losing total control. You can do this, like, in really simple ways, just providing 3 options. Things like that.
Hey, if everybody goes to Twitter at Paul Venner, I'll put it on the show notes. That's V-E-N-N-E-R. You're going to see him doing a rotation with some bag that has water in it. It's called the Aqua Bag. I think you're famous for this, but I want you to explain what you use the Aqua Bag for, because I saw it in Russia and I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah, so thanks for that. Basically, as a student, I learned from Franz Bosch about the importance of adaptability and variation. But then everywhere I came in practice, I saw people doing the same things over and over again. So I thought, how are we ever gonna improve like those things that are so important in daily life, as having to adapt to different situations and uncertain things and unexpected things, if we do the same thing over and over again? And it's totally not unpredictable. It's totally predictable. And then, like, I had this this insight of using water and moving water, because with the Aqua Bag, you have freely moving water. So now you have a dynamic responsive load. So instead of like having a predictable load, it's gonna respond on the way you move. So if you move a little bit more to the left, then all the water goes to the left. And now automatically you get the feedback that you you move out of balance.
Sure.
And if you move faster and with more complex movement patterns, then the water is going to move very unpredictably. And now it becomes very hard to control. So now the body needs to control it through co-contraction. So more localized around the muscles instead of that we can think about it from our brain.
This helps create the core strength also?
Yeah, exactly. So it builds this muscle coordination on a more local level. So it increases like self-organization within the movement pattern.
All right. I heard you talk about certain things when, like even in practice, you want to create some, obviously pressure, but you want to create, we talked about that, but we want to create fatigue also. So before somebody goes to bat, or talk about how you would create certain fatigue and why you're doing that.
Yeah, I did my master's study on it, like looking at partial and variable fatigue, so that you've got like different levels of fatigue within the body that's different every time. And this is also a way to change the constraints of the organism. So we've talked about task and environment constraints. And for example, like using an aqua bag is an example of having a different environment constraint. Mm-hmm. Applying local fatigue, that's different all the time. Now, every time if I do the same hitting exercise, still I need to come up with different solutions from the body. Because one time my right leg is fatigued, the other time my left arm is a bit more fatigued. So every time my body needs to come up with a solution that works. So I think this works really well, but you always need to look at it. You shouldn't give too much fatigue that the task becomes unsuccessful. So it's really important to always, again, look at that success ratio. So you don't want to have so much fatigue that the quality of the skill decreases.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, applying this in training, so having more random practice and having integration of strength exercises, sprinting exercises with hitting exercises and throwing exercises, combining it all together creates much more novel stimulus and different sensations all the time. And it's actually much more in line with what also happens during a game. Run from the field and have to hit.
Yeah. You're preparing them for the game, because in a game you're going to get fatigued. And how's your body going to deal with that fatigue?
Exactly.
So as a pitcher, let's take pitching. Give a couple examples. I'm working in a bullpen. What can I do to create that fatigue? Run a couple sprints before you.
So you can do like different things, just like one local muscle. So fatigue one leg by doing like single leg hops, like doing core twists with the aqua bag. For pitchers, I would be careful with like fatiguing the arm too much.
Sure.
So I would, just have like little variations within the body, and mix it up with like different variations, like with different surfaces, different materials.
So you might even be pitching on different surfaces. Might be lower mound, upper mound, uphill.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. So that's variation, and you're creating fatigue.
Yeah. And that's like on a high level.
Sure.
So if you then still can perform well, like then you've got really robust movement patterns.
Yeah, and as a coach, we have to be careful and understand that you're dealing with different ages. So, you know, their constraints are going to be different, as you mentioned.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing that sometimes people, it scares them off, like if they see certain exercises.
Yeah.
And that's like, I always tell, like, never just randomly copy an exercise you find somewhere on YouTube or Instagram. always look at the individual and find exercises that fit for that individual. Like that's the the art of coaching, that's very important, because what's medicine for the, for one person can be poison for the other.
Very interesting. Yeah, I definitely understand that, and I think coaches will understand that. Now, you hear a lot about the word chaos training. Is that what this is pretty much all called?
Chaos training? It definitely fits within that group, I think. Yeah, because you just add a bit more noise, more variability, more unpredictability, mix things up. Like sometimes you also work with sound and like novel stimulus, and like you can be really creative with it.
And Paul, what about when, let's take a regular practice real quick. Players show up, I'm going to do a warm-up. Are the warm-ups the same? Prepare players, are they the same warm-ups for everybody, or is it individualized in some ways because of their body structure or weight or other things, anatomy?
I think it's a mix of both. Like you can do warm-ups that are kind of similar for everybody, but just with enough variation. But also when players definitely when they become older, like that they have their own routines, but also that they know how to deviate from a routine. So if somehow there's not enough time and now they have to have like shorter time for warm up, they shouldn't be panicked because they've never used to do that.
Sure.
So I like get a lot of variation within warm up and methods of warm up as well. And that's both on a group level, but also like learning for them individually, like what do I need because I lack more mobility or because of my position requires these things, so that they are able to adapt their personal warm-up to that as well.
Absolutely. And one of the things I'd love for you to tell the coaches is a lot of the coaches have listened to this so far, you know, and they're learning a lot of things here. If you had one thing you want to tell the coaches after listening to you talk about all this, that's very important to understand. What would that maybe one or two things be when it comes to this type of training?
Yeah, so that it's not about the variation on itself. Like it's about what we learn through the variation.
Ah.
So it's sometimes we're just going to do random stuff because we learn that we need to have more variation. But it's really important that it's like directed towards a goal and that we that the athlete learns from it so that there's this feedback from it as well.
So let's take something. Take something you're working with a player on and you just give me one thing you learned from the variation. And how would you then apply that?
Yeah, so for example, there are many things. So for example, with in baseball, like rotation is really important.
Mm-hmm.
So if I make a rotation, I need to extend my trunk. So having what Franz Bosch called chest out while rotating in order to maintain optimum length and a good movement pattern.
Okay.
So if you, for example, have somebody in the outfield and they need to rotate to look at the ball while running. So if we do running exercises and we use a stick or like more advanced HydroVest or AquaBag, then if they're still able to maintain their running pattern and they're not their legs gonna move all over the place while rotating left and right, then they're gonna feel that they have like the right running patterns in
sure.
place. So you put more pressure on the movement pattern, and then you can play with that like with a lot of different options. So one time doing it with a stick, then with an AquaBag, then with a HydroVest, then with a weight plate, making halos, doing different type of coordination patterns. And by having a lot of different variations, they learn to understand this generic theme that we're actually working on. And that's like same for hitting in rotation. We also need that, like if to make it like a full deceleration and don't stop all of a sudden, so that the body needs to dissipate all the energy and spread it across multiple joints and degrees of freedom. So then we give a lot of exercises in which this principle is being expressed, and that the athlete's gonna feel how that's actually working and how it is expressed.
Love it. That's fantastic. And obviously, if I'm doing the aqua bag and it's too hard, then I might go just to the stick.
Yeah, exactly.
I might have to change and adapt a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes with exercises, and that's also something like from a standard linear progressive approach, we always go from easy to like harder. But I think a lot of the times we stay with too easy things for too long. And it's actually sometimes better to give something that's a bit more harder, because then the athlete actually learns that he's not capable of doing it, and then step back again, and then step up again, and make it more nonlinear. So instead of a linear progression, like play with those levels of difficulties a bit more. I think that's also really important in the learning.
That's a great point. I love that point. And I'll tell you why, because I remember working with young kids. A lot of times we wanted to start right at the beginning and make it so simple and then work our way up, where we could have just started with something and seen how they're doing. An example would be,
exactly.
You know, I could have a kid running and throwing a ball to see if he can do that, because it's a little harder, and then work
exactly.
backwards. Yeah.
Yes,
and it's more fun too. And I think we underestimate young kids too,
yes.
don't we?
Absolutely. And when I say harder, like I don't mean like using more weights or more load, stuff like that, but like from a coordination perspective. Yeah, just give them a challenge, and like they love to take challenges. Just play.
All right, this is a great time, because we're coming close to the end. It's a great time, because all our players around the world are in the house and they cannot go out. Now, they can go outside in the yard if there's nobody there, obviously, and they can do things in the yard if it's warm. They can do, you know, throw a ball against the garage or a wall, different things. But in-house or even in the yard, give our players around the world a little idea of a few things they could be doing that will translate to their development, obviously, in the game of baseball. Because sooner or later, the door is going to open and it's going to be, let's go play, but you got to be prepared or you can get hurt.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so I think it's really important to just stay in your best shape possible. And I think there's a lot you can do in confined space, like even throwing, like you can throw in a sock if you don't have any more space than that, in terms of like movement patterns. You can do so much. So that's the basis, like just do whatever you can and take the challenge to actually be creative and develop yourself in ways that you're not used to. So really take this as a challenge to actually learn all the stuff that we're talking about in this podcast.
Absolutely.
I think with like minimum equipment, you can do a lot. Like if you have an aqua bag, for example, if you have an elastic band, if you have like a suspension trainer or a kettlebell, or just some different things, you can do a lot. And look at the movement patterns and not at the muscles.
And when you talk about movement patterns, if I'm doing some movement patterns, even if I'm changing them, we're doing different things, is there a number of times you do it? You know, is it 3 times, 5 times? Or do you just go to the next thing after 3? How do you know what
yeah.
the...
Yeah, so basically, I don't like to work in precise reps that much. But what you see, if you definitely, if you trigger the neuromuscular system, and that's like a really important part of the movement system, that's all the movements that are really fast and really complex and really snappy, which also are all the critical elements of baseball. Then typically you get really quick fatigue, but you also get quick recovery. So then you are not able to do like more than 6 repetitions. So I like to keep repetitions low and have more variations. So I rather have a lot of different squatting patterns and jumping patterns and things than like doing 4 sets of 8 times the same exercise.
Yeah, that makes sense. And again, we go back to variation, makes it a lot more interesting. It keeps you engaged more too. Yeah. Not only is it good for you, but it keeps you engaged also in the activity.
Yeah. And for some inspiration or ideas, like I also am on Instagram and I share some more videos on Instagram actually as well. So that's also good.
Oh, fantastic. What's your Instagram? Paul, is it Paul Venner?
Yeah. Yeah, Paul Venner or Ultimate Instability.
Ultimate Instability. We got that. We're going to put that on the show notes. Hey, Paul, a couple things we're going to do here. I'm going to ask you a couple questions. One, what does Paul Venner do to keep himself in shape? What's your routine daily? Kind of a routine, whether it be nutrition, you know, some work. You don't have to give the specifics, but generally what you do.
Yeah, like my routine is variation.
I figured that one.
So I don't have a routine. Like the only simple rule is that I move and do something every day. And luckily, like my wife is one of the best performance dietitians in the Netherlands. Wow. So we always got good food.
Yeah. So you obviously eat well.
Yeah, we eat very well. A lot of
and you can throw. I mean, everything out the window. If you're not eating well, that's going to hurt your development.
Yeah. Yeah, so like to keep it simple, like I'm not a nutritionist, but I follow like the simple rules of like Michael Pollan, like eat real food, not too much, and mostly plants.
Yeah. Like, and some of it's common sense too. We know what most people know what's good and what's bad for
you. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's simple from that standpoint. Is there anything else you do during the day that's, you know?
Yes. Yeah. So I do a lot of movement snacks. So, like I do at least a half an hour a day, like of good activity. So it can be like a circuit or a run or, strength training, like different things. But also during the day, I do a lot of, small movement snacks, like just, a movement puzzle that I figured I'd like to learn myself. And then I challenge myself to play with that, or like just some simple rolling on the ground. Like we don't have a couch in our living room. That's something that people sometimes amaze if I tell that. But so we have judo mats and always like rolling around on that, like doing some stretches and moving there. So I like to move just a lot during the day, like little bits all day.
Fantastic. And what does Paul Venner do from an educational standpoint to make yourself better at what you do every day?
Yeah, good question. I'm at the moment, I don't have any formal education, but I am involved in a lot of study projects from different PhD and master studies that are running at our facility. So that way I stay involved within like a lot of the latest science that's going on. I read a lot of the science papers on the various topics that are of my interest. So I do that like on a weekly basis. And I just like to read different books, also books that are out of my window of expertise, just again like variation and some different things.
Well, I'll give you a great example. Our show's called Baseball Outside the Box. Well, I'm definitely going outside the box when I bring guys that have master's degrees, PhDs, are studying certain things that, you know, I'm not aware of as well. But that makes you better when you go outside your comfort zone.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's also why I love conversations like this as well.
Absolutely. And finally, Paul, we normally end it this way on the show, because there's so much to talk about in what you're doing. We possibly can't hit everything. I'm sure I've missed something that was important to ask you. I want you to pick something that you felt was important and needed to be said to our coaches, players, and parents around the world. Anything that you want to leave them at the end here with?
Yeah, let movement do the talking.
I love that. I got to write that. That's one we're going to, title of the show, Let Movement Do the Talking.
That's good. Yeah.
Explain that better. Our listeners, hang tight. Explain that better a little bit. When you say, you know, movement do the talking.
Yeah, so you learn from the movements you do. From the information you get from the movements. So if you create a rich environment in which you get a lot of information from the movements, then like the movement does the talking, and you as a coach can keep your mouth shut.
Well said. I love it. And you know what? I think for some of us, it might be hard to do that. And we got to get better at it. There's no doubt about it. You know, like you, I was very lucky to be around some very good coaches, older coaches that had more experience. And I was able to learn some of that early on, where less talking is better. But I know that for our younger coaches, sometimes we want to give a lot of information because we want to feel important too.
Yeah.
But players are smart. If you let them be part of the process, they will respect you more for that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, Paul, this has been fantastic. Got to thank you. I know it's getting later there in Holland. Thanks again for being on the show. Loved it. A lot of great information.
Thank you, Pete. Loves it as well.
All right. That's Paul Venner from Holland, the head athletic performance coach for the Dutch baseball. All his show notes, all his stuff on Twitter, Instagram is going to be on the show notes. I want to thank everybody around the world for joining the show and listening to it. Stay safe. Follow what you're supposed to do. Everything's going to be fine around the world. We're all going to be back in our activities pretty soon. I'm very confident of that. Keep listening to the show. Spread the show around the world. There's some great people on the show, so we appreciate it. Don't forget, we're also on social media, Baseball Outside the Box. We are at Baseball Out on Twitter. We're on Facebook, Instagram. We're all over. Love to finally thank our audience. You guys make the show, so thanks for really following us. Our numbers are getting bigger, and that's because of you guys spreading the show. So thank you. Thank you to Paul. Thank you to Lineup Media Group, our host of the show, Brian Kroc, our producer. I'm Pete Caliendo from Chicago. He's Paul Venner from Holland, the great country of Holland, great baseball country. We want to say thank you to all, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.